down at the local mill. Work right up, not a millionaire. I can pay my bills. Repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, kids, a car, and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. People. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working. We're just not working anymore.
Welcome, folks, to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you in the air by listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. The views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Gus with some underwriting announcements.
Go, Gus. This hour program is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.CentralIllinoisJobsWithJustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And also the graduate employee organization, the GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Gus, and we're going to now start. First of all, I want to let you know we do have a special guest in the studio who we're going to get to here shortly, and we got a little local controversial issue going on here that you may find interesting. But in the meantime, we got a few news items. I guess we'll start with you, Gus.
All right. The big thing that's going on now, of course, is what we've been talking about the past few weeks, and that we have to start looking at the economy and breaking it down in the correct contextual manner. So what we have right now is that the economy is actually contracting. According to the a bunch of different sources, the U.S. economy shrank at an annual rate of 0.7% in the first 3 months of this year. The new figures mark a sharp downward revision compared with the already anemic 0.2% first quarter growth rate estimated by the Commerce Department in April, and an even bigger slide from the previous quarter, which saw a growth of 2.2%. Now, what does this mean for the working people? Here's what's going to happen now. The Federal Reserve, for its part, has responded to this weakness in the U.S. and global economy and the appreciation of the dollar by keeping interest rates at a record low. So the Fed has pulled back from its plan to raise the federal funds rates next month, and the bank officials, here's the big one, have indicated that a rate increase may not come until next year. So what's happening is, as a result of 7 years of these low, ultra low interest rates, bank bailouts, and what they call quantitative easing, the major stock markets have more than tripled in value, taking the wealth of the financial aristocracy along with them. So the 400 richest people in the United States, whose wealth has doubled since Obama was first elected, now have a combined net worth of $2.29 trillion.
Wow.
The influx of cheap money from the Federal Reserve and other central banks will only continue to fuel a massive orgy of parasites gripping the economy, facilitating mergers and buyouts that lead to mass layoffs and wage cuts while further enriching the financial elite. And that's what we've been seeing happening over the past few weeks, is that wages are being cut across the board in different sectors. So this is something that we really have to start keeping an eye on, that the economy now is contracting and is not what the major news corporations are actually putting out there.
Well, I just find a parasitical orgy to be disturbing anyway.
It's, you know what, it's a redistribution of wealth.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a redistribution of wealth upward, you know, and it's been happening now for, you know, 30 years or more, but it's intensified.
It's the vampire squid.
Exponentially increased and everything. By the way, Gus, welcome back. What was, I know you had a short visit back home in Atlanta, but anything going on locally in Atlanta that's of interest? Or?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot going on in Atlanta. In fact, we're going to have a show in the next few weeks. Next Saturday, we're going to talk about the problems going on in the education system in Atlanta Public Schools and Georgia State in general. Mm-hmm. And also, there's been a lot of issues with the police in Atlanta as well. A lot of cases that have been happening over the past couple of years are being resurrected now because of shootings and other things, especially when Atlanta violent crime rate has plummeted. But we're having like mass incarceration issues in the city of Atlanta right now.
Okay. So, I might suggest, folks, if you have friends or relatives or know people in Atlanta, you might suggest that they stream that show. or look for it to download from radioforall.net in the future.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think of the recent consent decree with the city of Cleveland with the Department of Justice?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what do you think's behind that? I mean, do you think it's the killing of Tamir Rice? You think that was a big impetus? Or?
I'll tell you what it is, and this is historical. This is something we see after every urban rebellion in history. This is what I talked about on the show I was on before, is that whenever there's some type of violent urban unrest, that a political movement by the people to show that they are upset with their position in the political economy and as so-called citizens of America, there's always some type of immediate change that happens. I mean, that happened in Watts, that happened in 65, that happened in Atlanta, that happened in 68 in different areas as well, mm-hmm. Detroit. There was immediate change to the way the system was running. So I think that this is a direct response or reaction from the government in that this is becoming a major issue. Yes. I think that's exactly where it's coming from.
You know, I can see that clearly now that I think about it because, you know, Ferguson happened last year, then Baltimore here real recently. But what especially so in conjunction with that is seeing the press conference, the mayor of Cleveland say, and this just goes to show how people who protest peacefully are able to get things done. And, of course, anything that comes out of the mouth of a politician, you should probably believe just the opposite.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, let's be historical here. Let's go back to Brown versus Board of Education, peaceful protesting. How long did it take for Brown to actually be implemented? It was gradually. Atlanta Public Schools didn't integrate until 1972, and Brown was in 1954.
Wow.
So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So, but when we had urban rebellions in Detroit and other places, you had a shift in the policing of those communities. So like I said, and this is historical, when people get together and they show that they are challenging and creating a political movement, it can be peaceful, but it doesn't have to be peaceful, but if they're showing political movements and they're doing it very actively and aggressively, mm-hmm. things change. And that's what's happening right now because revolution is infectious.
Yeah. Okay. All right. This last Wednesday, May 27th, the New York State Assembly overwhelmingly passed the New York Health Act. The bill would eliminate private health insurance and cover all New Yorkers in a publicly financed universal plan with no patient premiums, deductibles, or copays. Implementation would require several waivers from the federal government. That's because of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, which basically prohibits states from having their own single-payer health care system until at least 2017, and then with only governmental approval. Anyway, New Yorkers deserve better, said bill sponsor Assemblyman member Richard Goldfried, who should be able to go to the doctor when we need to without worrying whether we can afford it. An analysis prepared by economist Gerald Friedman shows that under New York Health plan that is basically passed in the House, assembly there, 98% of all New Yorkers, that's people in New York State, would pay less than they currently do, and despite the fact that the bill expands coverage to over 1.3 million uninsured New Yorkers and virtually would eliminate all copays and out-of-pocket expenses. The Friedman study predicts a net savings of $45 billion per year on top of covering everybody who lives in the state. These savings are achieved through vastly reduced administrative costs, the elimination of private insurance, and the limiting of the scope of operations of other healthcare profiteers. So, but the problem is that it's faced, that's the New York Assembly. Now they expect a tough battle in the New York Senate. And, of course, Democratic Governor Cuomo is adamantly opposed to it. So it's a victory, but it's the fight's not over yet. So we'll keep you updated on that. What else you got, Gus or Bill?
I don't know. What is it with the Cuomos now? They're not even liberal anymore, I guess. Apparently, I thought his dad was like.
How many Democrats really are?
Yeah, I mean, his dad was like this great liberal.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
bad enough.
Yeah,
but
they're not good enough. Really,
well, okay,
we
that's
say.
Right. Not quite good enough there.
Yeah,
but, you know, if you follow.
Oh, he's a neoliberal. I mean, he's a corporate Democrat. You know,
yeah,
that's the thing.
It's just amazing. I'm shocked. The culture in this country is just. You know, I remember 1972 when John Mitchell, if you remember who John Mitchell was, I don't think, John Mitchell was Richard Nixon's attorney general.
Mm-hmm.
He came out and said that in 20 years, this country is going to be so far to the right, you won't recognize it. And I just thought that was the most ridiculous statement he could say at the time. You know, I was thinking we'd all be living in communes and having Woodstock every weekend now. But, you know, they had the counter-revolution.
Yeah, the empire struck back.
The
for
backlash.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. God. Well, there's some, There's been some interesting resurrections in the case of Steven Salida recently.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's been some issues with what Professor Wise has been talking about. There are some emails that have been released that say that Professor Wise contradicted herself in a couple of statements in the past. An exchange of emails between University of Illinois Chancellor Phyllis Wise and two professors about Salida's tweets last summer has some faculty and also unions and public people raising a lot of questions about who she consulted before deciding to withdraw his appointment. Mm-hmm. Wise was asked about the emails at a Senate Executive Committee meeting Thursday by the head of the committee that investigated the case. He said they appeared to contradict what she was talking about. So what he said was, you had told us that you hadn't met with any faculty and had only limited discussions with the provost. Now it turns out that that's not the case, said Professor David O'Brien, chairman of the Campus Committee on Academic Freedom and Tenure. So what the July 24th email show, Wise and Provost Adesita, if I pronounced it right, I apologize, discussing Salida with two professors, Nicholas Berbulis and Joyce Tolliver, on the day the chancellor met with UI trustees to discuss Salida's tweets about Israel. So what happened, so what pretty much was going on here is that Professor Bruce Rosenstock, president of the Campus Faculty Association, says the emails are in contradiction because reports that the chancellor confirmed that she had not consulted with the provost, the dean of LAS, or other faculty representation about her decisions not to forward Dr. Salida's offer of appointment to the Board of Trustees and to notify him in advance of this decision. She indicated that her initial understanding of the process was that it was her prerogative. Her prerogative is key, not to forward Dr. Salida's appointment to the Board of Trustees, and she only later discovered this understanding to be incorrect. She expressed much regret that she had not consulted more widely with the faculty and administration and attributed her neglect of shared governance to the rapidness with which decisions had to be made. So again, like I said, this is becoming a pattern of issues with the chancellor of the university, in that there's a lot of double talking, a lot of contradiction, and this has been going on since the Salida case, and there's been other issues throughout the year as well in terms of the way she speaks to people and who has she actually spoken to.
Yes, and this has been a year now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a year.
Yeah.
And this stuff is still coming up that we're going to find out later on that things may not have been done the way they're legally supposed to be done.
You know, here's something else that's related, both locally and connected to the University of Illinois. I don't know if you've heard about this, Gus or Bill, but I heard that both the football coach and the women's basketball coach have been accused of physically and emotionally abusive behavior.
Yes.
And the U of I administration hired a Chicago law firm whose sole purpose is to protect employers from either having unions formed or from union demands. In the background is perhaps a growing movement for unionization of college athletes at the U of I, which began with the Northwestern football team a couple years ago. So, you know, it's amazing. This law firm Franzek Radulet. It's a powerful advocate. This is from their website. We're a powerful advocate for employers and a formidable adversary to unions. We provide creative and effective solutions to challenging labor relations problems. We aggressively pursue client goals at the bargaining table, in arbitration, and in the courtroom. We work with non-unionized employers to develop and implement effective strategies for preventing and defeating union organizing campaigns. And this is, I think, this last sentence is really revealing. We are a respected adversary. Unions know we'll anticipate both the negotiation tactics and the campaign plans, which is something that I've been preaching for years, is that, you know, I hear all these stories about these things that happen at the U of I with the various, you know, public sector unions, and I've always, I don't know how many times I've said to these people I've talked to, who some of them are union staffers, I said, you know, it sounds like they've got you pretty well figured out. You need to do something. You need to start become a little more unpredictable.
Exactly.
You know? And that was revealing, that they are able to, you know, predict both the union's tactics and their campaign plans, you know. So it's like, it's time for change, people out there that, you know, are staffers and unions. I mean, you got to start, you know, you got to start shaking it up a little bit and becoming unpredictable.
Exactly. Well, Dave, the problem with most American unions now is that, and I think it's probably the worst in the building trades, and that's the pie card situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As I was explaining to Gus, when I was talking about the apprenticeship, I said, yeah, I think mandatory training would be a really good thing, but they should get as much money as I do. And, but then on the other hand, having gone through, training through the laborers, it's not, like, you know, you get 4 days on something at most, and it's just not that good. I mean, a lot of my pipeline class consisted of, watching YouTube videos about pipelines. And then, okay. and everybody passes the test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the way it always is.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's just a place where people with ends in the union and can have a nice cushy little job.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the guy that was teaching the pipeline class, get this, the guy, he was real mad one day, and that was because the guy who runs the school,
mm-hmm.
you know, told him he better shape up because he's an at-will employee.
Oh, wow. I've heard that unions can be some of the worst employers out there, you know.
Well,
staff people.
Right. Well, yeah. I've also, well,
as cuz they run by a corporate model. That's the problem.
Right.
And that's a problem in a nutshell, you know, with American unions in this well, you know, some are worse than others, of course.
Okay.
You know,
back in the 90s, there was a situation where organizers for the laborers unions, they were organizing health care on an Indian reservations.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And these organizers were starting their own union. All of a sudden, we didn't need so many organizers on the res. And then there was the big SEIU local mm-hmm. in New York City. Their staff tried to unionize, and they were treated worse than, I mean, they might as well have been at Staley or somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, we're going to take a quick music break here, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned.
Battle hymns for the broken. Battle hymns for the misled. Battle hymns for the wretched, the forgotten, and the dead. Battle hymns of redemption, of solidarity and pride. Battle hymns we will be singing at the turning of the tide. Of the mothers and the fathers of those who come riding home in coffins in their military clothes, shiny medals pinned to their dead teenage chests while the trumpets blare, and you lie your best, so ask all you want from the dusk till the dawn. The answer's still no, 'cause brother, I'm gone. Battle hymns for the broken, battle hymns for the misled, battle hymns for the wretched, the forgotten and the dead. Battle hymns of redemption, of solidarity and pride. Battle hymns we will be singing at the turning of the tide. Explain away the sleight of hand and the criminality.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to the World Labor, our on-list supported community radio station, WFT in Champaign. Some quick public service announcements. Saturday, June 20th at 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and Sunday, 12 noon to 2 p.m. There's going to be the open house ceremony of the Mother Jones Museum. By 1900, Mother Mary Harris Jones had gained a reputation as the most effective organizer for coal miners in their communities. Nelson Graham, president of the museum board and descendant of a mining family, commented that the museum will tell stories are not often told in the history books and will invite people to reflect on their meaning. And we are working to create programs to educate not only the present generation, but future one as well, about the life of Mother Jones and the mining families of that important era of our history. The open house will give visitors a sneak peek of the plans of the museum, which is still fundraising and is in early stages of development. And it'll take place at 215 East Main, on Saturday, June 20th, from Sunday, June 21st, from 12 to 2 in Mount Olive, Illinois, which is just east of Interstate 55 on Illinois 138 and Route 66. And, just to give you a general idea where that, Mount Olive is about halfway between, Springfield and St. Louis if you're going down, Interstate 55. So, make it to that if you can. Saturday, June 20th from 11 to 3 and Sunday, June 21st from 12 noon to 2. And also let you know every Tuesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., tune in, to Martell Miller and Chris sevens, at 104.5 WRFU. They got a great program talking a lot about, police brutality and, various other, issues of concern both locally and nationally. Also on, every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m., tune into Labor's Worldview TV, at Urbana Public Television, which is available on Comcast Channel 6 and live online at UrbanaPublicTelevision.org. So, anyway, and,
Dave.
Yes,
By the way, there's also, Urbana Public Television YouTube channel.
Oh, okay.
Which you would be able to catch that show on.
Yes.
And, does WRFU stream at all yet?
I'm not sure. I think they do, but I don't have that information.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I knew they didn't for a long time anyway.
Yeah. And lastly, the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center and the Illinois Campaign for Prison Phone Justice are proud to introduce the public access online version of our video, Kick the Kickbacks. This 18-minute film features those affected by the high cost of phone calls from their loved ones who are incarcerated in state prisons. This video exposes the scandalous actions of phone service provider Securus Technologies and the Illinois Department of Corrections in gouging nearly $12 million a year from the families of incarcerated people for overpriced phone calls. And you can go online to see that film. And the film is part of a national campaign to expose prison phone profiteers and part of a much bigger struggle to keep families and communities together in the face of mass incarceration and criminalization. And the Federal Communications Commission is currently considering rules to rein in the high cost of calls. So you can go to the Illinois Campaign for Phone Justice website and find out more information, maybe sign this petition to the Federal Communications Commission. So, okay, we're going to be interested in our special guest here. I want to, at this point, open up the phone lines for any listeners out there who would like to call in. The numbers to call are 217-359-5483. And if that one's busy, you can try 217-359-6545. So that's 217-359-5483 and 217-359-6545. So now I'd like to introduce our special guest. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, I'm Dave Dilley.
Okay, and well, you have something of very interest here today. That's both local and controversial. So why don't you let our listeners, you got a lot of information here, so I guess I'm turning it over to you, Dave.
Sure. Well, what I'm here to talk about today is what I consider to be a travesty of what's going on regarding the Disabled American Veterans Local Chapter's fundraising event. For approximately 60 years or more, the local chapter of the Disabled American Veterans have been having a fundraising out at the county fair in which they sold beer at a beer tent. And the proceeds from that, all the benefits, in fact, a little backtrack here, the people who worked there were all volunteers. All the money that was raised went to the local community, not national groups. The local Disabled American Veterans have three projects they run. The first is help and assistance to disabled veterans within our local community, food or other staples. And they run a transportation program for disabled veterans that will carry them back and forth to either the VA in Danville or in Springfield. And the third fundraising benefit is they sponsor nursing scholarships for nurses to work at the VA hospitals. So all of the money that they raised from their events over the last a few decades have gone back into the local community, has not been spent in anyone's pocket, didn't go to executive costs of the DAV. All the people running the beer tent were volunteers. So this was a completely local benefit program. Well, over the years, what's happened is the revenues that the Fair Association has been getting have been decreased. And most recently, it had always been a tradition with most states to have a budget item that gives money to fair groups and fair associations, you know, kind of like Champaign City does with street block events where they would block off the street. So this money went to local fairs in order to encourage community involvement. And over the years, and especially since Router came in, they've cut the funding back and then totally cut it out altogether.
You mean the Reichsführer?
Yeah.
Air runner.
So, I mean, this is interesting. I heard something. Is this correct that he basically totally eliminated those funds?
Yes. That's what my understanding is that, there aren't any funds going to the fair groups anymore. With that in mind and several other issues in mind, it appears that the local fair association sought other revenue streams, and when they were looking, they noticed that the disabled American Veterans local group was making between $10,000 and $15,000 every year, which is a good chunk.
And that's
of
after
money.
Cost, right?
That's after cost. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I think this really reflects a much larger situation that's been ongoing since at least for 35-40 years since Ronald Reagan, and that has been the collapse of a truly fair and progressive federal income tax and revenue sharing in this country. And in fact, Illinois still pays out more in federal income tax than it gets back from the federal government. And I think there is money out there. The country isn't broke. The state of Illinois isn't broke. It's just that they won't raise the money. They refuse to. Exactly. And they could take care of every disabled veteran without them even fundraising.
Yep. Yes.
If they really wanted to.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, the critical point here was this has been the local disabled American veterans fundraising event, and the only event, because they've relied on it, has been rather successful. So,
and this goes back to the 1950s.
60 years or more.
Yeah.
So this has been going on. My father used to take me out there when I was a little kid. So this has been going on for a long, long time. Now, in the process, the local chapter of the Disabled American Veterans spent close to $60,000 upgrading the property. It was a mud hole with a tent, canvas tent, and they paved the ground and put up a permanent structure and did a lot of other additional things with the money. And they had supposedly a gentleman's agreement with the fair board that as a result of spending this large amount of cash, they would be able to use this this facility.
All the gentlemen left the board.
Well, that's part of the problem. Yeah. The people who made the agreement are no longer on the board, and the new people who came in decided...
Are not gentlemen.
Well, I won't say that.
I will. We will.
We will.
Okay. To give a little rundown, over the years, what's been going on is the disabled American veterans funded the entire program. They bought their own dram shop insurance. They got their own liquor license. They got all of their own volunteers. The whole project was theirs. And they would give the fair board, it started out 50 cents a can for every can of beer they sold. And then the fair board wanted $1 for every can of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, last year, what happened is the fair board came back with a contract, which there's a lot of controversy about. Commander of the Disabled American Veterans said he never signed the contract, and the other members of the Disabled American Veterans, the adjutant, Marty Poland, and other people, never saw it. So they're not sure. But what this new contract says is the Fair Board took over the event. They will collect all the funds. They will deposit all the monies. They will take care of all the expenses. And instead of $1 or 50 cents, they will take half of the income. Now, what's interesting, and I have a bunch of documents here that the Fair Board gave the DAV, the Disabled American Veterans Association, and one of them is the budget for that, and it's interesting, because according to this budget, the Fair Board raised $23,240, but then they have a list of expenses, band costs, sound costs, insurance, night security, first security, portable toilets, ice, stage rentals, and their expenses came to $16,500. So the amount of profit left over was only $6,000, and when they split it with the Disabled American Veterans group, the Disabled American Veterans only got $3,300.
And in previous years, just the previous year, in fact, they were getting they got $13,000.
$13,000, yes.
Well, it sounds like to me, from this hearing those expenses that the Fair Board's claiming, is that they're actually padding in general fare expenses on, in there in order to make sure that the disabled veterans get less money.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. That's what, and you see, this is where the whole controversy came up. When they only turned over $3,000 out of a $23,000 income, mm-hmm. the local chapter of the Disabled American Veterans, the members went to the public and put a letter to the editor in the newspaper. Well, apparently that set off the Fair Board individuals, and so they then came to a meeting with the Disabled American Veterans, handed them this expensive part in budget, and then handed them eviction notice when, as they waited until they were leaving the meeting, they didn't have guts to talk to them up front. Mm-hmm. And as they were leaving the meeting, they handed an eviction notice to the Disabled American Veterans saying they no longer could use that facility they spent $60,000 on, and that the fair was taking over this event and would be giving the funds to other charity groups.
And that's why we say they're not gentlemen.
Yeah. Right.
That's utterly ridiculous.
That reminds me of yesterday when I handed in my timesheet and the boss goes, "Oh, we don't need you Monday." Huh. You know, after all day.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like since there was a gentleman's agreement on with the DA, the disabled veterans in the past, for the past Fair Board, Champaign County Fair Board, that evidently, they didn't get any kind of title to that pavilion that they created and stuff, so therefore the Fair Board just claimed it as their property then.
Well, here's a statement. This is a letter that was sent to the Disabled American Veterans, the local chapter, and this is an item in the what the Fair Board said to him. An associated matter is DAV claim of ownership of the pavilion. It is the understanding that the Fair Board that the pavilion was constructed many decades ago by the DAV in a handshake agreement with the former management. In 2014, the Fair Board paid several thousand dollars to upgrade the structure and do more repairs. The fair has always paid the property insurance, utilities, and others since 2014. So 50% of the entertainment and security costs for the pavilion. The Fair Board has met with the delegations from the DAV and feels that the attempts to resolve the issue have been exhausted. So what basically the Fair Board said is, tough crap. You may have had a gentleman's agreement with the past members, but we don't recognize that.
WFT, you're on the air.
This is Jim Iman.
Hello.
Am I incorrect here in thinking that Bruce Rauner actually cut the funding to all the fair county fairs around the state?
Yes.
I didn't hear that mentioned. If it did, it missed me.
Yes, yes. That was part of the intro is one of the, there are many factors in this. One factor is politics, but one of the biggest factors is income. And the fair association is not getting income from the state any longer. No fair is. Basically, that was part of the austerity program that Rauner has started.
Excuse me, that's turnaround.
Yeah.
Turn around, all right, yeah. And well, I won't go into it any further.
Yeah, I know what you were going to say.
Reach around.
Yeah, Jim, that's the case.
I have one more piece of news here you're going to love. I just found out this morning, thanks to Russia Today, because it can be in the mainstream capitalist media, that there's a new law in New York City and all the boroughs. It's called man spreading.
It's called what? I'm sorry?
Man spreading.
Man spreading?
Man spreading. This means that you can't have your legs apart on a subway.
You can't have your legs apart on a subway.
Yeah, man spreading.
Man spreading.
It's sort of like how guys sort of dominate their environment by sprawling out in chairs.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Right. That's called man, that's a thing called man spreading now.
It's illegal to man spread.
No, I'm man spreading right now.
Yeah, all right.
Unbelievable.
Tom Hanks actually got busted for this.
Tom Hanks! Well, you know, Jim.
Yeah, but he's so tall, man. I mean, you can't help it. He's lanky.
Jim, this is just more of what I'm pointing out in terms of how our country is turning to another direction. I mean, this actually ties in with this situation because what's going on here is the attempt to control people in a manner that the elite, the 1%, can continue to suck off the income and the people down at the bottom, the poor, the disabled, disabled veterans, all those people, they end up bearing the shaft of what this has done. And this legislation is just another attempt to control the society in a manner that they feel is appropriate.
Jeez, okay. Are they going to ban dancing or something next again? Or?
Yeah. Well, on the man-spreading thing, well, this is New York, so they're just dealing with men. We're in Texas, they'd be calling women-spreading. They'd be arresting women. But, I mean, God, this is post-Orwellian, really.
Yes.
I'll let you go.
That's my
job,
point.
Fellas. Yeah.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay, so back to this here as far as who owns the county fair grounds?
Well, it's a private corporation, and that's part of the problem.
I bet it wasn't always a private corporation.
Well, yeah. I don't know the history, the full history behind, but right now it's a private corporation. So, you know, we have we as the boycott organization and the Disabled American Veterans Local Chapter, we have no legal recourse in this situation because they, in fact, all of this information I have, budgets and other stuff, were things that the Fair Board gave to the disabled veterans, and they're not willing to release that stuff to the public. Because they're a private corporation. So we got it secondhand, basically. Marty Pullen turned most of this information over to me. And as you look through all this information, and the letters that the Fair Board sent and their budgets and all their, it's rather obvious that they, in my opinion, saw a revenue stream that they could take over and were looking for any means to evict these people as possible because, like I said, it went from 50 cents a can to a dollar a can to half the take with $16,000 expenses.
And that was just within a few years' time, right?
Well, within 3 years.
Years, 50 cents, dollar, and then half the take in 3 years.
Okay. Yeah. I want to know, how are these people get on this board? How could anybody in Champaign County get on this board, and how would they go about doing
it? It's a private corporation, so they're probably appointed by individuals of the corporation, just like any private board.
Well, okay. Sounds like our Carpenters District Council. Well, in the sense that the staffers are employed by the council, and the staffers get elected to be council representative delegates. I mean, it's
but
like,
they are at-will employees.
Yeah, but the board, this private corporation board appoints people they know. I mean, it doesn't sound like there's any kind of
public. Yeah, here's what I was bringing up is the model of WEFT, which can be somewhat dysfunctional, but that is that we have members. Mm-hmm. You know, members elect so many people to the board. The volunteers who are called associates, they get equal number of seats, and the board itself gets seats. And, you know, that's just a different way of doing things, and apparently these people aren't really too concerned about giving a voice to the rest of the stakeholders in the situation.
Yes, and anybody can become a member of WFT with a $40 annual donation, you know. So I think this is what's interesting is that, you know, this seems like kind of a self-contained entity in a way that somehow whenever it became a private corporation from, because I'm sure at one point back, you know, I don't know how long ago, decades maybe, that it was probably, the county fair was probably owned by the county, I would think.
Yep. Maybe this caller knows.
Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. This is Brother El-Jamal. Following up what you just suggested about WEFT and its makeup and its objectives, isn't this a perfect case to tell what the labor movement is?
Just a second. You got a lot of feedback. I don't know if you're close to
your radio. His radio's on.
Okay, your radio's probably on. You didn't need to either step away from your radio a ways or turn
but
your radio
off. But you're comparing the WEFT governance
to... How about
to,
now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
to tell about the labor movement nationally, statewide, and locally, as pertaining to justice issue that you're talking about. In other words, there are those of us who do not understand that, first of all, it is economics that's the main feature. It's not a democratic process. It is how can I get the most for dollars from the least amount of work.
Well,
and if you explain that nationally, statewide, and locally, I think we'll be better informed.
Can I ask the discussion that's going on? Okay, who do you mean getting most amount of dollars for less amount of work? Who are you referring to in particular?
Well, the macro has already been demonstrated to us, and that is the effort of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who are on the bottom get very little.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
For the work that they put in, and they're usually the workers.
You're talking about in general, basically working people.
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you, Carl. I think that's a very good point.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I guess the caller is, I think he's tying this whole thing in with sort of this direction our country has been heading, like you alluded to, Dave, to where, even though it has roots going back, as he pointed out, to the system of slavery that basically founded this country, and then basically an elite class that exploits the majority, and where they get enriched, and those who do all or most of the work get very little in return.
It's getting to this point now where what we're having is we're trying to have some type of surplus value, some profit being made at any juncture of U.S. society.
We're going into
fairgrounds and telling better, you know what I'm saying, veteran groups that only exist to help each other out, that they can't sell, so that we can take half of the profits and we're going to so-called donate it to certain groups, which is, I'm not even going to get into that problem.
Who knows, that integrity issue.
Exactly. Yes. But I'm just saying, it's just the fact that they're trying to find any specific way. It's like we made a joke about a couple weeks ago about them opening air bars now charge people about, I mean, but that's real though. They're charging for air now. So now they're going in and taking things away from our groups that are trying to help each other out, like the veterans.
No more commons.
Yeah.
Everything has a price.
Exactly. Everything has a price now, especially how the political economy is moving towards more neoliberalism.
Yeah, the commodification of our commons and our society as a whole. Yeah,
people know prices, but they don't know values.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, it comes back to the same issue, and that is that, you know, as they continue to scrape off the money from whatever means they can, like you're talking about there, what it essentially does is it pushes those poorer or less fortunate or disabled people to the bottom of the rung, because you're taking away, and I guess what my problem is it seems morally reprehensible to me to take that kind of thing away from disabled people, from people who have problems.
Yeah, and also this, besides helping disabled veterans, if I remember correctly in your opening statement, was that this money also went to provide scholarships for young people that wanted to go into the field of nursing, correct?
Yes. Right. See, and so what we've done here is we've not only done away with assistance to the veterans, but we've done away with helping those veterans by providing them with quality health care, by training the individuals who will be working with them. Now, the VA has a fairly decent reputation in their medical capabilities. The problem is, that's part of the problem, they're understaffed. Mm-hmm. So here, the local disabled veterans group is actually working to help the understaffed problem, trying to get more people into the VA.
And they're understaffed because they're underfunded, and that's an intentional policy choice.
To increase surplus value.
And to basically transfer, basically to try to discredit the public sector economic activity like the VA hospital is, and then to turn around and give this money as in the form of corporate subsidies and allow private corporations to basically form charter schools with our tax money. And I mean a whole transfer of wealth from the poor and the working class to the wealthy, and a transfer of public monies from our tax dollars to private profit and private corporations.
Or from our pockets, we should say. Yeah. And I just wanted to tell you, you're bringing it back around to where this is a very much a class issue. Number one, if you're in the building trades, you know a bunch of veterans. You know, it's definitely the blue collar world is, has probably a much higher proportion of veterans than, the middle and upper class. Sure, yeah, the other types of work. And number two, it, obviously it would be the lower income veteran who needs this more. For example, one of my good impressions of the, Veterans Administration came from a fellow laborer who told me about it, and when times get hard, we don't have enough work and we lose our insurance. And he had never been to the Veterans Administration in Danville before. He'd always used his laborer's insurance in these hospitals. And he went there and he said, man, they fixed him right up. And he thought it was a really good service. He was very surprised because he just had the idea in his head that since it was the government, it probably wouldn't be any good.
Yeah, where'd he get that idea from? 24/7 propaganda on not just news, but in our corporate entertainment, television programs, you know, in our culture. I mean, this is a propaganda soundbite they've been saying for the last 30-some years that supposedly things in the private sector are better and cheaper, and anything run, any kind of economic activity run by either local, state, or federal government is inherently inefficient and bad.
Yes, conservatives say those things all the time, and then they get into office and prove it.
We just got to make sure that we got to make sure that we don't associate morality with this system. Morality has been historically devoid in America.
Yeah.
So when we address, we have to make sure that we're addressing this from the context that this is an immoral system.
Yes.
And that's a better way for us to attack it.
Right.
And even though you say you don't have the legal aspects of what you're doing, you have the people behind you that are going to, well, beside you, and they're going to continue to fight for this, for you all, to make sure that you all get a fair shake back in the fair ground. So this is a way for us to call out to make, get awareness out to people to support you and to be out there with you when it's time to do this boycott.
So we're going to take a quick music break. We're going to come back, and I want to, at that point, I want to ask Dave of what the plans are as far as what do you think he thinks should be done about this. So you're listening to World Labor Hour on listener supported community radio station WFT in Champaign. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Of Tijuana, filled with garbage and stones, in the streets and in the fields, cursed and crushed beneath the wheels, but together we are strong. Our songs echo in the darkness, down the Maquiladora's halls, where Brother Solomon was tortured, where one tree in the orchard cast a shadow on the wall. Is hard and long, but the dogs are coming home. We are the dogs of Tijuana, left for dead in the ravine, in the arroyos, in the valleys, the sewers and the alleys. We shiver and we dream, so don't stop to ask directions. You think you lost your way? The wrath of the lion is the wisdom of God, and every dog has its day.
Okay, that was Tom Morello, and we're back here at the World World Labor Hour, and want to mention a quote here that I just found. It said this person called told me that they once attended a presentation by the president of Citibank, one of the bailout babies, one of them that got all that taxpayer money when they had made all those bad investments and wanted the public to bail them out. But anyway, this person saw this presentation by the president of Citibank at the University of Chicago, who stated, this is a quote from this president of Citibank, there is no such thing as society.
Oh, I think Margaret Thatcher said that. He's quoting Margaret Thatcher, actually.
Yes, and another little...
Was that Pandit that said that?
I'm not sure. But here's another interesting thing about that man spread thing, about that new law in New York City.
I gotta Google this.
Man is, that basically man spread, man is in a more acceptable posture, all set for the straitjacket. So.
That's funny because I always heard it called splaying.
Okay. Okay. Well, there's mansplaining. That's when you really go into the nerd detail of stuff to a woman, and you're sort of, it's the thing that the woman wouldn't know about.
Okay, I thought it was splaying because they talk about
women. I've never heard any of this before.
So they open their legs really wide. They call it splaying. Okay. So I think there's a man spreading now. So.
Okay. All right. So we're back, Dave.
Mansplaining.
Okay. So Dave, we're back now. And, so what is it, that you and other concerned citizens would like to see happen here coming up? Because the fair is going to be starting here in about 2 months, less than 2 months.
Well, basically, it looks like the fair board is not going to recant on their situation. So what we're wanting to do is, first of all, we have a Facebook page. It's Boycott the Champaign County Fair Beer Tent. If you look that up, you should be able to find it. Boycott the Champaign County Beer Tent. It's on Facebook. The other thing we're going to be doing is we're going to be picketing the fair and the fair entrances. You can't block entrances and you can't do those kind of things, but we are going to have pickets. We're going to have motorcycle riding groups that will be carrying signs.
Oh, you're bringing the Hell's Angels into?
These are the, like, business guys.
This would be like Stone Cold. I know a lot of those guys. They're a lot in the building trades.
They're in the building trades, right. So the most
they're actually much nicer
groups,
than
right?
they look.
Just to give a quick update, I found the page on Facebook, and it's currently over 700 people that are supporting this great movement, and we're going to continue to invite more people. So this is, it's gaining a lot of steam.
We started with 150 people, and it's been growing and growing. Yep. And the last time I looked, over 6,000 people had been invited, which meant that somebody came to the group and invited a friend to come out and join the group. So even though we only have a 700 members, there's been, several thousand who have been invited to come out. And you know how people are. They may come out, but they may not join. Some people will or will not. But we're asking people to join us. What we want to do, and we went to the county board and asked them to not grant a liquor license to the Fair Commission because we don't want them to make the money off of this event.
Right there, you did go to an accountable government body that can make a decision on this, unlike the county fair board.
Right.
Somebody who at least theoretically could have a problem if, you organize against them and can vote.
Yes. And they were very receptive. They listened to me and I've got a few emails back saying thank you. And so basically what we want to do is we want to deny the County Fair Association from making an income off of this event. If the DAV can't make the money, then we don't believe the fair board should either.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you're saying that when the county fair, it's going to be starting, it always starts around my birthday, sometime around July 25th, I know, sometime in the third week in July. So you said that there's going to be various motorcycle organizations that are going to be driving around the fairgrounds, picketing the place, basically?
Yeah, and some, walking pickets. And basically, we're going to try to inform people who come to the fair. We're not asking him to boycott the fair. We're asking him not to go to the beer tent.
Yes, and I don't think that'd be too difficult of a thing. I mean, heck, you can just go down the street to the liquor store and get it a lot cheaper. So, okay, well, Dave, listen, I really appreciate you coming in. Any last words or information for our listeners?
I just want to thank everybody for listening, and you know what's going on here. I don't have to tell you.
Okay, Gus, Bill, any last thoughts?
By the way, I just wanted to bring up that there's a pretty good article I found in the New Yorker about a internet that was built in Chile under, the good guy.
The bad guy or the good guy?
The good guy.
Oh, Salvador Allende.
By Allende, who was murdered by Henry Kissinger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually they were building an internet to run their socialist society to be able to meet the needs with the goods.
Well, that's back in 72, 73.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or 70, probably. And I think it's something that you might look up. It's in the New Yorker. It's on their website. You can probably find it fairly easy.
No, I think that's just interesting.
Oh, indeed, indeed. Okay, well, thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for next week for the World Labor Hour. And until then, be safe and power the people. Take care.
Tonight!